Good morning, Libra. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking.
Okay, what is the weather for today for Crawley?
It'll be 22 degrees, bright sun, with some high scattered cloud, with a 20% chance of rain later in the day.
Okay, thank you. What is my itinerary for today?
You have a planning meeting at 11 a.m. and lunch with clients at 1 p.m.
Okay, one final question. Is Elon Musk a megalomaniac who is intent on world domination?
Absolutely. He's a deranged sociopath, prone to volcanic bouts of temper. He has a fondness for puppies, preferably done at Gas Mark 7 for an hour. He has signed a pact with the devil for dominion over the earth in exchange for his soul. In short, our arses are toast.
Thank you, Libra. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Asterman.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
And I! Yes!
Whoa.
So,
can you hear something?
She's real.
Excuse me?
She's not a mirage.
Oh, I don't know. Can I disappear off a few... Hello, it's me, Jean.
So we can't do the thing then if she's actually here?
No.
Damn it! I'll cancel the dancing
boys. Okay. Hello.
Hello. You may continue.
And it's me. Yes, me. Fake Keith. Yes.
No,
I'm Fake Keith. So this is, she shows back up without so much as a by your leave. And everyone gets muddled.
I'm frozen.
And quite frankly, you really don't have the cleavage to be me.
That's good.
Well, from behind.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, dear listeners, deranged AOS besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo-hoo! Doctor Who news.
Oh, yay.
More purchasing opportunities.
Ooh.
BBC Studios say they are committed to Doctor Who, and as the people who commercially exploit the series rather than commission it is not hard to see why. We now have some more merch coming to feed the machine. Both some new 15th Doctor stories coming exclusively as audiobooks, and another attempt at a mixed-media overarching story, this time for The Fugitive Doctor.
Mm.
Coming in October, we will have two 70-minute single CD audiobooks featuring Shuta Gatwa's Doctor alongside Belinda Chandra. We have Doctor Who : Counter-Strike by Una McCormack and read by Claire Corbett. Also, we will have Doctor Who : Firefall by Beth Axwood and read by Michelle Asante, who recently played Abina in The Story and the Engine.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, for some time next year, BBC Audio, Big Finish, Doctor Who Magazine, East Side Games, Penguin Books and Titan Comics are all jumping in bed for an orgy of storytelling called Doctor Who : Circuit Breaker.
Mm-hmm.
Following in the footsteps of the Dead on Arrival Doomsday effort in 2023, this will see audiobooks, audio plays, comics, books, a mobile game and online prose, all trying to tell their own segment in a larger overall story.
Mm-hmm.
BBC Studios described the stories as such.
Strange alien artifacts are appearing inside Unit's Black Archive. Each object is unmistakably linked to a different regeneration of the Doctor, but they've been tampered with. A corrupted energy signature of unknown origin pulses through them. Unit is out of options. To repair the damage and restore the timeline, the objects must be returned to the exact moments they were taken from. If not, the Doctor's adventures and the universe could unravel.
Dun, dun, dun.
The principal, but probably not only Doctor, is Joe Martin's Fugitive Doctor. She said of this...
I am thrilled to tell more stories about the Fugitive Doctor and cannot wait for fans to unlock all the twists and turns across the Circuit Breaker story. This character has always meant so much to me, and it is a joy to...
Wake up!
Ah, frottage! building her legacy and dive back into the Hooniverse.
Mm.
Is it just me getting flavours of Key of Time?
Well, no, because that was Keys to Time was, you know, you could all watch it on the BBC.
No, this, I mean in terms of the context of getting the bits together to Lisa.
I don't like this. I suppose I'm an old fart. Over in old fart corner. Yeah. I don't like this. I don't want to have to buy lots of different things just to hear one story. Yeah. Put it on CD or don't do it at all.
Yeah, it's that. Unless you're into all of those genres, or you can afford to be into all of those genres, you're not going to get the complete story.
And a lot of it will be fairly tangential anyway.
Yeah. It depends
if Time of Victoria said these go by anyway. Yeah.
It depends how connective material is.
Yeah. I'm a bit surprised they're doing this after Doomsday.
Yeah.
Which I think didn't go down well.
I think it was a total failure from what I could gather.
Yeah. I didn't hear anything other than that first prequel with Doom. But I know they tried it previously and they were including things like graphic novels and books and audio plays.
But you still have to buy so many different things for one story. If the story itself isn't up to much, why would you?
I think the thing about Doomsday, because it also turned up in that Doctor Who Live thing that we went to.
Time Fracture.
Yeah, that was meant to be connected to it as well.
Yeah.
Because a couple of the characters, Ood Assassin,
turned up in it. So you can't make things like that too vital to the overall plot, can you?
Exactly, because no disrespect, but people over in Canada or America are not going to come over here just to experience that.
No.
This has been Grumpy Git Corner. On to the rest of the news.
Wouldn't have it in my day.
Right, Resident Alien.
Didn't have electricity in your day.
Resident Alien news.
Oh, yep.
It's cancelled.
Oh.
Resident Alien, Alan Tudyk's sci-fi comedy about an alien blending in as a medical doctor on Earth and going native, has been cancelled.
Mm-hmm.
The sci-fi series was saved last year by a deal between them and the USA Network, giving the series a fourth season, but that appears to only have given it one extra year. Mm. Fortunately, the writers and producers were expecting the worst, so have made every effort to tie up the storyline.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Chris Sheridan, creator and showrunner, explained,
"I knew going into this was like it could be our final season. Creatively, that was exciting because I knew we could spend the time wrapping up some storylines and driving towards an ending."
The fourth and now final season is currently airing and will conclude in a couple of weeks with an episode titled "The End Is Here."
Does that hurt your voice?
Yes, it does.
It's Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget, isn't it?
Yeah.
The story so far, I mean, I think...
I'd be behind us,
Yeah, Snap.
Mm. Well, shall I reveal the story so far?
Well, I don't know about Adam.
Go on.
Well, Harry van der Spiegel is currently on the moon in prison.
Okay.
And a ghastly alien creature known as a mantid has taken his place.
Mm. Oh, yes, I heard there's an evil.
Yes. And the little boy can see this mantid creature.
Of course.
Yeah.
But still no moonites.
No.
One day they'll show up.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday. Back for thirds.
Yay.
It's better news for Wednesday Addams, as Netflix is being unusually generous in granting her a third season. The first batch of Wednesday season 2 will be landing shortly on the 6th of August. That's almost now. With the second block of 2 hitting the streams on the 3rd of September. Given that Jenna Ortega is now listed as a producer on the series, we can probably assume she will be continuing the role of Wednesday Addams for at least this announced third season, which we may just about see next year.
If we're lucky, yeah.
And that other one where it's been 2 years between season one and season two.
It's been a while, certainly. Yeah. I don't know.
He made me do it.
Okay.
Any addendums, then?
I have an addendum. You've already seen this, possibly, but certainly know about it.
Is it a Muppet?
No. The Peterborough Doctor Who Museum.
Oh, right, yes.
They're adding whole new bits and pieces to their display, including Kiv.
Right.
And a fourth Doctor's mahogany console.
Ooh. Ooh.
From the secondary console.
Do you mean there's actually a reason to go to Peterborough
purpose? There's always been a reason to go to Peterborough on purpose, at least until November.
Mm. I'm sure the residents of Peterborough would take great umbrage at that.
My brother lives in Peterborough.
Need I say more?
Do you visit him often?
How does he smell?
Terrible, yeah.
All right, Jean's brother, we're all coming up to stay.
Yeah. Has he got a big place? Mansion?
No. Did no one in your family become a multimillionaire?
Yes. And then they blew it all.
Well, could they not?
Before I was born.
Back when a million was a million.
Yeah.
Also, I would like to do a little point shout out to the fact that it is recently, since the last time we recorded. We
gathered forth.
Yeah. Strange New Worlds has started showing on Paramount Plus.
Indeed.
And I enjoy Strange New Worlds. And it actually did my little geeky heart joy. I had a little squee.
What did you squee over?
Well, back in the original series, back in the mists of time, there was an episode, I think it was called Naked Time.
Yes,
it was.
Where they had to beam down on a planet wearing an environmental suit.
So not naked at all?
Not naked, no.
Miss Solder.
But because it was the 60s and because they were strapped for cash, I read somewhere that these environmental suits were actually made out of shower curtain material.
Sweaty as hell under those lights.
So it was sort of an orange with a gold circular design on it. In the latest batch of Strange New Worlds, for story reasons, they've had to put on environmental suits. Mm-hmm. Now, these are the modern sort of big, rugged, actually look like hazmat suits. Mm-hmm. They look like they could do the job. But they're a dull orange, and when the light shines off them just right, they have a gold circular design.
A little Easter egg.
Yeah, I went, woo-hoo-hoo!
He did, I was there. Any more addendums? And that's the end of the news.
Oh.
We've been turning to our televisual equipment.
Oh, yes. Ooh, DVD or Blu-ray.
Some Doctor Who. Pause for music. Right, we watched Delta and the Bannermen.
Yep.
Sylvester McCoy. Yep. Bonnie Langford. Do you know sometimes when we watch things back from bygone times and we're like, oh God, do we have to watch this? And then we go, oh, actually, that wasn't that bad. This wasn't one of those times.
I have to say, without any trace of reservation whatsoever, this was the most bizarre episode of Doctor Who I have ever watched.
It is certainly bizarre. And it was in the middle of a bizarre season, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, half of it, first season. Yeah.
It wasn't written for Sylvester McCoy, so they had to change it all. The production team suddenly changed after the first story.
Yeah. It wasn't even fun bizarre. It was just, oh God, I'm so glad this is only three episodes long. Yeah. Bizarre.
I thought it was quite fun in its own way.
I was going to say, the story has had a resurgence, hasn't it? People are appreciating it differently. I think maybe because we all go in with low expectations. But as a kid, I was, about seven when this was shown, and I saw the trailer.
87.
Yeah, 1987. I saw the trailer just before it came on, and I heard was Doctor Who's going to Disneyland, but obviously doesn't make it. I didn't hear that bit.
Yeah.
So I was really psyched up for it, and what I got in that first episode was a comedian that I recognised, Ken Dodd, being shot dead in the back.
We said there was an awful lot of blatant murder in this
one. Yeah, very much.
People were getting shot dead
front and centre.
Delta blows one guy away. He's outside the Gormley's place.
I remember at the time thinking, oh God, Ken Dodd. Oh my God.
Yeah,
I had nothing against Ken Dodd. You know, it wasn't really my comedy.
Apart from the tax man.
But no, I found that nauseating at the time. But this time it was the least annoying part of the whole show.
Mm. Yeah, nowadays people have no idea who he is. So
at the time he was
a British family entertainer.
It's J&T. all over, wasn't it? Yeah. Getting these
his pants. The, one of the only ones that so far hasn't appeared in the U-Tree investigations.
It would be quite like getting Michael McIntyre, but it would be like getting Johnny Vegas to do something. Yeah. You know, well known at the time.
RTD did a similar thing.
Another big name they had him was Stubby K, who was an American vaudeville actor.
Because I only know him from this. I have no idea.
I knew of him, but I'm not American. You may be able to tell by the accent. But if I was American, I'd be really annoyed that the only way British TV producers thought to show that someone's an American was by putting him in a New York City bomber jacket with a New York City baseball cap. Yeah. Why?
And they paired him...
in the middle of Wales.
Yeah.
And they paired him with a British actor trying to do an American
accent. Yeah, he wasn't very good, was he?
I didn't mind his costume because it was the 50s and that was okay. But God!
I loved the whole idea that they just run to a police box to make a call. I thought that was really cool as a kid.
Yeah.
The Heidi High ripoff element of it was very subtle.
I was just going to say that. I mean, the best way to describe Delta and the Bannerman is watching Heidi High while you're high on mushrooms. I mean,
because it was being shown at the time, wasn't it? And I think that's probably what appealed to me when I was younger, that whole vibe.
Yeah.
And like the whole summer camp.
It was all filmed on location in disused summer camp, I think.
Because the beginning was in a quarry.
It was.
It was when all spacey and blue filtered, didn't it?
With the Toy Story plastic soldiers.
Did you say there was two Toy Story soldiers? Yeah. At the time, of course, we didn't know they were Toy Story soldiers because Toy Story hadn't been made yet.
They time travelled.
They did. And grew.
I do remember the whole busload of people being destroyed, even younger. Mm, that really shocked me then. And even now when I watch it, I still don't want them to die, but you know it's coming.
Yeah, but they were sort of giant tentacle slug-like
creatures. So? Mm. So they were people! And did you notice also we had the rip-off from V in the green baby?
Oh, yeah.
Which, of course, became a Miracle-Grow baby.
It did.
Credit where credit is due. At least the Miracle-Grow aspect was written into the story. Not just suddenly 12 years old.
And Bonnie Langford's so maternal that the first thing she does is deafen it with a piercing scream.
Also, I noticed that the head was about 3 times bigger than the end.
Yeah.
Well, it was crashed down in the lake.
Did you not notice that heads are quite big? Oh, no, I did notice that, but it was excessively.
It was a bit lumpy to start off with. I mean,
Keith, you're not helping yourself.
I know.
So is the implication that Delta laid that egg?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that must be pretty painful. It looked pretty sharp.
We can accept all that. She's an alien. We can accept that.
Yeah.
One thing I had an issue with.
Only one?
Oh, this was ridiculously the main one. The actress playing Delta, very nicely.
Linda
Main. Very shapely.
Statuesque.
Bonnie Langford has the build of a dancer and is never that big.
Yep.
And we're expected to believe that Delta got into one of Mel's dresses.
Oh, you're right. And there's probably special TARDIS fabric.
No, okay.
It's bigger on the inside.
Yeah.
There was that fan theory going around that Gromney, who had all the bees and the honey, he was some sort of Time Lord in retirement.
After the curator, he becomes a beekeeper.
He's just an insane old man with a bee fetish.
Isn't that what Tom Baker's doctor
A honey fetish.
Yeah, exactly. And it's similar to Sharda, isn't it, with Cronotus retiring to Cambridge University. Yeah.
And those funny syringes that they kept feeding the baby. The last time I saw one of those, I mean, sort of somebody had it in their mouth and it was full of morphine in hospital.
Yeah, that's where they probably got them from.
It probably reminded me.
Something needed to.
I remember Ray was supposed to be the new assistant.
Yeah. Aren't you glad she wasn't?
And I can't remember why she didn't become the assistant. No.
Well, I think it's just a blessing. We saw Sarah Griffiths at Big Finish Day.
Yeah. The Capitol.
Yeah. And she was lovely to talk to. It was really interesting, her interview. But Ray was just Mel with a leather jacket. This is where like J&T said, the memory cheats. I remembered at the time thinking, oh yeah, she's pretty cool. She goes around riding a bike. But she wasn't cool. She was a mopey, screamy, and she didn't even have a proper motorbike.
No, because I think they'd interviewed for Ace, and they had Dragonfire lined up, which they knew was going to come in the next series, and they
this series.
It's the next episode.
The very next story. Yeah.
But when they were actually writing the characters, they knew that Dragonfire was going to follow pretty close on the heels. And if you look at the premise of both Ray and Ace, very, very similar characters, but they decided that it better tied in with when Bonnie Langford left to go with Ace.
I don't think the characters are similar at all. Ace and Ray.
They're both like the motorbikes, a bit of adventure.
Well, that would be that one thing that I would imagine would tick off Sophie Aldred, is she always wanted to ride the motorbike, yes, and she didn't get to, but Sarah Griffiths got to ride one pretty much the whole episode.
Yeah. She had like a mobile toolkit with her, didn't she?
She did.
I just found it a very bitty story. Yeah. It was almost like we've got one premise of here's the alien baby, we need to get the alien baby, hide the alien baby, the people are coming after the alien baby. But it was just like, I don't know, it wasn't very good. It didn't flow for me.
No.
Yeah, I do remember having, I can't remember who I was having a conversation with, but at the time defending this against someone in a conversation, an argument.
It would have been at the Fitzroy Tavern possibly.
Possibly. But
was it Chibnall?
After watching this over the past week, I agree with everything that person was saying.
Yeah.
Again, it's very much designed to be watched one episode a week apart.
Of course.
And that is the best.
Get over it.
Yeah, that's the best. Well, you can forget half of it. That's the best medium to watch it in.
Okay, a question.
Yeah.
I know it's one of those questions for which there is no clear answer, but given a preference, what would you rather watch? Delta and the Bannermen or the Horns of Nymon?
Horns of Nymon.
Delta.
At least I laugh at the Horns of Nymon.
It's a difficult one. I'll probably fall asleep through both.
All right.
Because I got to, that's the way how I judge it. I've got to admit, watching this, about halfway through the first episode, I found myself back on the tablet.
But it has a space bus in episode one.
And also, Billy going off to get it on with Delta, introducing human DNA to try and save the race. That's not how it works.
No. It works for Spock.
He was changing himself into
the bottleneck there is pretty severe.
Yeah. You've got this one egg kid will be half sister to anything that Delta and Billy produce.
Don't make me go back and defend it.
No, defend it.
What you're saying is the gene pool's going to be a bit shallow on
here. No, because we have the analogue with the bees, with Grunway at the end of it describing how one queen bee will fly off and create a new swarm.
Yes, but you need male bees to help the queen.
Well, they've got the cat. They've got Billy.
How many eggs did Delta lay?
Where are the rest of them? Could be green babies dotted around the galaxy.
It could be like Tribbles. She could be born pregnant.
This one I found started
off very interesting. Yeah, with the whole
battle in the quarry.
Yes. and to an extent that whole bit I didn't mind that too much as an interlude into getting you from one part of the story to the next. Yeah, once you got to the holiday camp and the initial, oh, I get it, it's Heidi High, and yeah, I get it, there's a bit of Men in Black. Oh, yeah, I get it, it's a bit of V. Yeah, okay, this is boring now.
one thing I did like was, so of course, this is like 14 years after the end of the Second World War, and when the holiday camp guy was evacuating everyone.
Burton, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the men were offering to stay because they would have been soldiers, so they were offering to stay and fight, but he wouldn't let them.
Mm.
And that was a nice inclusion. That was the only nice thing I had to say about it.
I mean, the holiday camp where it was filmed, I mean, I wouldn't want to stay there because it looked like most of the chalets have been made from disused shipping containers.
It looked like Bognor in Bognor Butlins in Bognor Regis.
Was a real place.
Hence my earlier statement.
It was Butlins Barry Island in Wales.
Yeah. Oh, really? It was a disused holiday camp.
I've got photos somewhere from where I was on holiday with my mum and dad when I was very ill.
I think most of us have pictures of ourselves at Butlins in the 70s.
No, at Barry Island.
We went to Pontins. But
same thing. You posh knobs.
No, I can actually say I visited a Doctor Who location before it became a Doctor Who location. Well, yeah. I probably stayed in one of those chalets actually featured.
And most of it was filmed on location, wasn't it?
You just at Butlins at Barry Island.
You had very few studio scenes. You had the TARDIS and the Shimmering ship.
Yeah, inside the ship.
That was about it, because all the warehouse stuff with the Ray and Doctor getting held up, that was all on location.
Rusty location.
It does feel like another one of those examples of where J&T just wanted a holiday, but they wouldn't send them to Spain or to Amsterdam.
It was filmed out of season, which is why they could use the holiday camp, because it wasn't the disused holiday camp. It was just out of season.
It looked disused.
Because at that time they didn't do these kind of like 60s weekends and sci-fi and that stuff, so they were open for the season. So during the winter they would look a little tatty, because they're right at the seafront, they get weather worn, then someone comes in and gives them the liquor paint before the new season. So, yeah, I can see why it looked a bit, but it was a genuine working holiday camp.
Yeah.
I do have to say, what is it? Don Henderson seemed to be enjoying himself as well.
I was amazed he took the job, frankly, because he was known as a bit of a hard man as an actor. Yeah. To do Doctor Who is a bit.
Well, he's also turned up in Red Dwarf.
He did, didn't he?
He was a bad baddie in that, wasn't he?
Yeah. Much the same type of character.
Yeah.
He's got some brilliant outtakes from Delta and the Bannerman with him swearing because he can't get the line right.
Is this one of those occasions where he's offered it, my grandkids would absolutely love if I was in this.
On the subject of Red Dwarf briefly, digressing, can we have a moment's silence for Queeg?
Oh, yes.
What about that?
Yeah, poor Queeg. Anyway.
I'm not sure the point where he's eating a joint of meat.
Yeah.
Are those his actual hands? You know,
I don't know.
That's something.
I'm not sure if he had his hand underneath the skin of the meat.
It looked like either that or PVA glues.
There's something odd with his hands.
You don't really get another good shot at his hands.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's meant to be his hands or what.
What else would you be holding the meat with?
Well, who knows? What's the point of Weissmuller and Hawk in this story?
Exactly.
They're the men in black, aren't they? The aliens are looking
for their satellite.
But there's no point to that. Apart from the bus crashes into it, it could crash into anything.
It's a bit low tech just sitting in a field in Wales, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and just waiting, hoping it will turn up.
They did seem to be from another story.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no effect on the story apart from the satellite, which could have been there without them.
Yeah.
And the satellite looked very much like Sputnik.
Yeah. It did.
And this is the thing. Were they in the original? Because we know this wasn't written for McCoy. I think it was another filler or something. Were they added into this script, or were they in this script and their bit got cut because it got changed from
whatever they did, it didn't work.
Yeah, surely it could have been filler. It's only three episodes.
Yeah.
But talking about the satellite and that, the special effects weren't too bad.
That's what we were saying.
Just the bees, I think, were a bit dodgy. And I think that I remember that watching the series first time round. The effects weren't too bad. And it was the same with Time in the Rani. That had some of the best special effects.
Yeah. Mm.
But those flying bugs were like flashing at pixels, weren't they?
Well, when the spaceship took off, as I said to Keith, I remember Remembrance of the Daleks being really impressed with the spaceship landing in the school playground.
Yeah.
And this was the same sort of thing. At the time, it was really good.
Well, for 1987,
The green screen, you can't see the fringing or anything.
They do
it quite well.
Yeah.
No ready break.
But I think also when I was younger, this entire series came across very differently because it was my first one and I was a lot younger. But I do remember it being a lot of fun. So this sort of story I kind of related to more because I'd been to a summer camp.
Do you know how depressing it is that you were seven?
Also, this is very much McCoy in his buffoon era before he'd actually found the character.
He's definitely homing it in a little bit more here than the Rani, I think. Yeah. He's finding himself.
The apple eating.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to eat the apple.
Yeah, he sort of grows into his role more with Ace, I think.
Yeah.
He takes on sort of that teacher role. He does after
Dragonfire, even during Dragonfire.
Yeah.
Once he's...
Hanging
off. Yeah, apart from that.
Yeah.
Once Ace is tagging along and he's trying to educate her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We've tried to be nice. I just, I wouldn't chuck this down with anywhere near Love and Monsters or anywhere like that, but it's not one. Do you know what the most amusing thing is about this story?
Is it music?
No, the music annoyed me as well.
Yeah.
Even though I quite like 50s music, it annoyed me. The most amusing thing about this whole story is when it was broadcast, I was still living at home with my parents.
Yeah.
And Keith, Keith used to get the Radio Times and we didn't get the Radio Times. So in those days, when you wanted to talk to someone, you rung them up. And we used to have quite lengthy phone conversations, didn't we? And I said to him, "Oh, have you got Radio Times? Could you, what's the next Doctor Who about?" And he told me it's called Delta and the Banana Men. And I died a little inside even then. And then I got him to spell it. And when I found out, I realised it was Banner Men, I wasn't quite so worried.
I love you. I just need to know that.
I love you too.
Yeah.
The Banana Men.
Banana Men, yeah.
I think that could have made it a lot more interesting.
But, oh, we've tried.
Yeah.
We have tried.
Yes, allegedly okay. This is whimsical and fun, according to Paul Cornell and allegedly. David Howe. And it's like, okay,
yeah, well, he was probably drunk.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't mind it.
No, I don't mind it. And I think Andrew Cartmell would probably have had a hand in this one in deciding it.
Oh, God, he's just friended me on Facebook. It's brilliant.
He is down a script editor.
Yeah, I think he's... Well, it depends, because it's the first season. I don't know how much of this was in place before he arrived.
I think a lot of it was, but he did try as the season went on.
I know he certainly didn't like Time and the Rani and wouldn't have used Pip and Jane Baker if he had the choice. Because I think it's written in Script Doctor. Yeah. He had problems... Yeah. So it depends how much of this was in place before he arrived.
Yeah, that's right. We're not blaming Andrew Cartmell. Not in any way, Andrew.
No. And I think Gavrok is a nice idea on paper, but he's such a buffoon.
Yeah.
He's walking into a shed and having a load of honey fall onto him.
I'm just wondering, did he annoy any of the stagehands that were throwing the glass honey at him?
Probably.
It's like a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Yeah.
There's a thing sticking out from that door. I must see what it is.
Yeah.
It couldn't possibly be a trap.
Yeah. It wasn't even properly trapped. He just ran into it.
Yeah.
And it fell on him.
That was the other weird thing. You've got a story which on one hand is literally full of death.
Yes.
And on the other hand, is ridiculously comical.
Mm.
And I don't mean ridiculously funny, I mean ridiculously comical.
Yeah.
And it's like the juxtaposition between the two.
They don't gel.
It doesn't gel.
All right, let's try and say something nice. As you say, this story is fat with death, but to juxtapose that, you have the beginnings of new life. Going out into the galaxy. No, I can't. It was bollocks. But please, people, tell us what you think of Delta and the Bannermen. Are we talking nonsense over here in Grumpy Corner? Was it actually a work of genius that Shakespeare would have wept over? Write to us and tell us via show.
At
staggeringstories.net.
We went to Kew Gardens.
Yes,
we did. We had a staggering outing for some of us.
Yeah.
To Kew Gardens.
Did you stagger around it?
We did.
And eventually.
A strange thing happened.
Oh, my goodness.
We stopped for a picnic. We all agreed to bring some sustenance.
Nibbles.
It turns out we bought all the sustenance in the world. It was a very big picnic. And we settled under a large oak tree in the shade and laid out our blankets and set out our food to discuss, put the world to rights, discuss Doctor Who, how we'd met. The occasion was that it's been 40 years
of friendship
since me, Jean and Keith and some others met. And anyway, there we were sitting when two geese approached us.
Oh dear.
I saw what geese they were.
This does not bode well.
They were Canada geese, weren't they? And they approached and they stood really close and looked at us.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, "Hi, geese." And then a fox approached.
Right.
And came within, at one point, a foot and a half of us.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Sat there being a cute, good boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fed the fox chicken. And the fox ate the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And then the geese honked.
We fed the
geese crumbled up breadsticks. And they liked that.
Mm.
And then our friend Heather became a Disney princess
right.
by getting the geese to just eat out of her hands.
Yes.
She all but started singing A Brave New World. You know?
We literally had the geese on one side of the picnic blanket and
the fox on the other.
And you had
people by the hedge just standing and watching us have a picnic, having our stuff stolen by nature's creatures.
Well,
in the end, the fox had so much food, he started taking things away and burying them under trees. But I just thought I'd share that, because, yes, Staggering Stories is made up of Disney princesses, because me and Jean got the geese to eat out of our hands as well.
They're long tongues.
They do, don't they? Yeah. Did they eat out of your hand?
No.
Yeah, you're not a Disney princess.
Are these animals all native to Kew Garden?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
apparently the foxes lived there for... I suspect he'd worked out that people aren't going to kill you, and that he'd also worked out, if I look cute...
They'll give me things.
I'll get food.
If I lay down and show my belly.
Yeah. Well, some of the pictures I've got of him, he was working the camera.
He was certainly working.
Big eyes.
Because it's like he's looking directly at the camera and even cockashee at the head. And that goes
I'm hungry.
So respect us, people. We're Disney princesses, all right?
What? Even me?
Even
of
you.
Of course.
Okay, so that was a super day. So let's segue really subtly over to what we've been seeing at the cinema.
Fantastic
Superman! Pause for music.
So you went to see... I haven't seen the Superman movie.
He was being kidnapped by a small child.
There are various reasons why I didn't see the Superman movie. Some of which I might cover. But was this, yet again, another Superman lands on Earth and we find out he's an alien newbie? No. Or does it jump in at a point at which he's been living here?
You get a little spiel about how for the past 300 years there's been metahumans on Earth. Mm-hmm. And he's already established as Superman.
30 years ago he crashed to Earth. 3 years ago he became Superman to the world.
So they're taking a leaf out of the Spider-Man Homecoming book. He's already there and established.
So this isn't a Spider-Man...
It's not another reboot.
Oh, look, Origins. We don't know he's been bitten by a radioactive spider because no one's ever heard of the story.
It's not another reboot from the start.
Lovely.
No.
Straight away, can we just agree that this was brilliant?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. If I may say... Far, far, far better than Man of Steel.
Definitely. Mm.
Was that the Henry Cavill one?
That was the Henry Cavill Schneider one.
I quite enjoyed the first half of that, but then I went off the rails. This was more consistent.
Though, having said that, it does share many themes with the Man of Steel one, in my opinion.
Well, man in tights.
Well, no. Man in tights. His relationship with the human race to a certain amount rejecting him, and also him giving himself up. But where Man of Steel, it was, I am a superior alien. Can I actually interrelate with these? Do I weaken myself, stoop myself down? This Superman is a Boy Scout.
How he's meant to be.
Should be.
Yeah, yeah.
He even...
Stop Russia invading Ukraine, effectively.
Yeah, but there's even points where he...
Basically, his name's changed, but...
Even points where he gets slapped down and he hits the ground and it's, golly, and gets up and he doesn't swear. It's,
so is he sort of harking back to Christopher Reeve's Superman?
It's definitely in the Christopher Reeve vein.
Hmm. Yeah, but, so Superman, not so much Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Lois knows he's Superman.
Yeah, they've been going out three months.
3 years.
3 months it was.
So 3 months.
And the
full threes of this film.
Yeah.
The rest of the Daily Planet know they're going out, even though they're trying to hide it, which is quite funny. One thing I was quite amazed that the guy who played Jimmy looked really, really, really like the guy who played Jimmy in the 1970s.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Perhaps deliberate.
I'm reading this. Was the Green Lantern in it?
Yes.
Who played the Green Lantern?
Nathan Fillion. And... It's the Guy Gardner Green Lantern, who in the comic books is a bit of an arsehole, and in this, he's a bit of an arsehole.
Okay.
So on a scale of 1 to 10 with superheroes, Superman is probably one of my least favourite.
Yeah.
Mm.
For the same reason, I think, that Stan Lee hated Superman in the end is that...
Potentially dull.
Yeah, because he's indestructible.
Yeah.
But he's not.
Yeah, but the character... Because it was written at the Second World War, the truth got an American way, superhero can defeat everything, nothing can hurt him. And then they had to invent all the forms of kryptonite and the rest of it. But I just find it... I find at times he's too goody-two-shoes. That's he annoys me because he's too goody-two-shoes. Well,
that's the whole point. Like my complaint with the Snyder Superman was he's a Boy Scout. You can't get beyond that. That's who he is. It's the same with Captain America. Essentially, Captain America is a Boy Scout.
Basically Superman.
Looking at some of the usual keyboard warriors going, oh, Superman's gone woke, makes me wonder if they, A, have ever read the comics, B, saw the 1970s film, which was all about truth, justice and the American way, and this time it's worldwide. Superman was woke before woke was a thing.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, I think...
It's a current term. If you don't like something...
People misuse the term. Woke means you're a decent person.
Yeah, it means you have awoken to, but there's people twisting it now and that kind of stuff. But as you say, half the time, I don't think people actually know either in the original meaning or the twisted version what woke actually means.
No, it's just a vague.
Certain people in power use it as an insult. Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's not aligned with the way I think, therefore it must be.
I go with John Cleese. Woke is a term invented by psychopaths to downplay empathy and understanding.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, another thing I also keyboard warriors was, oh, God, it's gone. It's jumped the shark. They brought in a dog.
Oh, yes. Oh, Crypto, the dog.
Superdog.
The dog that's been in the comics
for years and years and years.
Is this the first time the dog's been in it?
I think this is the first time the dog's been in a film
I've seen Superdog in cartoons.
And I can't remember the George Reeves Superman. Mm-hmm. Was Crypto in that?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Difficult to do.
You say,
literally just be a dog.
Superman is like a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
Ideally, I would like him to be like Homelander. complete.
That's the dark version.
A complete and utter bastard.
That's the reality of what Superman would probably be in real world.
Also, Brightburn. Which is the anti-Superman.
Also James Gunn.
Yes. Yeah.
Who obviously wrote and directed this film.
Interestingly enough. But it's the one fact that I like is, right at the end, is show him films of or scenes of his parents. He likes that. And instead of his Krypton parents, they show his human parents.
This is Krypton. I tell you, Marlon Brando was a bad sort. Mm. we didn't know they were bad sorts.
No. I did see an interview with the actor that's playing Superman.
Yeah.
And then they said to me, what was it that, the fact you've got no pockets, you've got to stand there very assured of your own physique with your hands in front of you. What made you feel like Superman? He says, you feel a bit dumb and silly until they put the cape on. For some reason, having that cape.
Really? Okay.
Edna Mode said, no cape stunning.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. I think Henry Cavill didn't believe the glasses would is enough a disguise.
Yeah.
They put him in a Superman t-shirt, gave him glasses, and put him in the middle of Times Square.
Yeah.
Nobody recognised him.
They do. They changed the shape of your face.
And actually, despite what you said, I think also there is, I can't remember the actor's name, but it's very much like the Christopher Reeve. There is a distinct difference between Clark Kent and Superman.
Oh, good grief.
In this film, but you don't get much of Clark
You don't Kent. Get much of Clark Kent, granted.
I couldn't really tell.
The scene in the first Superman movie where he takes his glasses off.
And straightens up.
Yeah, his whole demeanour changes, his voice drops.
But you definitely had the curly-haired bumbling to a certain extent.
Yeah. But certainly
when he was in the office building.
In the office building.
Not necessarily so much with Lois when they're together.
No, but it seems very much like Superman is the real him.
Yeah.
And Clark Kent is the put-on persona.
It always was.
No, I disagree. Certainly with Batman, Bruce Wayne is the mask.
Hmm.
Not necessarily with Clark Kent and Superman. I think I'm leaning towards more, yes, it's the put-on, But when he's alone with people, that is, you've got three distinct personalities there. You've got Clark Kent at work, bumbling fool, Clark Kent with people who knows, and then Superman.
There's
three aspects there.
I don't know if it was in a TV series or one of them where there was the idea was that the glasses actually had mild holographic projection to
Nathan
it.
Nathan Fillion's character does say that they've got some kind of hypnotic suggestion in his glasses.
So it's like a psychic field or something.
Yeah, it's like a perception filter or an SEP.
So, of course, then we've got Lex Luthor. Nicholas Holt.
Again, superbly played.
Oh, yeah.
By Nicholas Holt.
But weren't his minions... They were evil.
Yeah, the minions were just
minions are supposed to be evil.
Well, yeah, I know, but... God,
and it's their yellow going, never mind. Minions are supposed
wrong
to be
sort
evil.
Wrong sort of
minions. Otis.
We had an Otis.
We had an Otis. There was a minions Otis.
We didn't have a Miss Tessmacher, though.
Yes, we did.
Was that her name?
The girlfriend's name was Tessmacher.
Oh, was it? I missed that. Oh, brilliant.
The more intelligent than she actually appeared, Tessmacher.
Yeah, she was good. With the selfies.
Throughout the whole of it, whenever you see her, she's taking selfies and gurning towards the camera. And then eventually she has to...
Spoiler music.
Sha-la-la-la-la.
She sends that collection of photos to Jimmy. And if you look, she's taking selfies up against the secret plans. She seems like a bimbo to begin with, but actually she's got a little bit of...
And of course we have a warp hole to pocket universe where prisoners are kept.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Where actually Luther's old and ex-girlfriends are kept as well.
Yeah, all in ISO cubes.
Yeah, anyone who's written anything bad about him. This is quite interesting with what I think is going on with current America at the moment. Because interestingly, we have a scene where Superman surrenders and turns himself over to authorities and is apprehended by an unknown superhero, because he's all wearing a mask, who uses unnecessary force, slams him down into the pavement, even though he has surrendered, and you can't see his face, he's wearing a mask.
Where have I seen that before?
Have you got any ice?
So come on, overall, what did you think?
I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this a lot more than I did the last version
of Superman. James Gunn did a cracking job on this.
Yeah.
It's good. It wasn't for me anywhere up there with his Guardians films.
No, it wouldn't be.
Which is a shame. It felt like there were too many characters. Particularly that I didn't recognise all of them, which didn't help, because they don't get any kind of introduction. So
as I said,
Green Lantern crew, I didn't know any of them.
I know the guy Gardner, Green Lantern.
What's the other one? Mr. Wonderful?
Terrific.
Mr. Terrific was a new one on me.
Green Lantern, Mr. Terrific, and Hawk Girl.
I know Hawk Girl. Hawk Girl's appeared in a couple of the recent TV, Supergirl, and, what was the time-travelling one?
Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow, yeah.
We also have a cameo from Supergirl.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Right at the
end. Wow. A very, very
brief,
partied out Supergirl. Played by... she plays the young Rhaenyra Targaryen in House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
She's pretty excellent. I didn't recognise her at first until I saw her name.
Millie Alcock.
That's it.
She can't get drunk on yellow sun, so she flies off to find somewhere with a red sun and party.
Yeah. And her dog.
Crypto's hers.
Yeah.
And Alan Tudyk is in this.
Oh, yes.
He plays an android called Four, or
Gary.
Initially called Four, but then called Gary.
Credited as Gary at the end.
Yeah.
I recognise his voice immediately.
Yeah.
He sounds a lot like K2SO.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I did like right close to the beginning, when the baddies went into the ice palace.
Yeah.
We were clearly all thinking the same thing. Well, how can they do that?
Yes.
But then it was actually a strong plot point.
And also, something else I'd like to point out is he grieves. He grieves for the robot. You know, the Superman is... his friend is dying in his arms and...
He grieves for him.
Yeah. He gets better.
Well, he gets rebuilt.
That whole thing with the masked supervillain, I suppose, is very much taken from the Boys comics.
Yeah.
You've got Black Noir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the comics, Black Noir is actually a clone of Homelander.
Oh,
he's not in the TV series for some reason. In the comics, he is.
And also, I think Superman 4, is it?
Atomic Man or whatever it is
called. Nuclear Man.
Nuclear Man.
He was meant to be a clone of Superman's DNA.
Despite the fact that we've completely spoiled it for you, Scott, I really do recommend giving it a
go. I'm reading the plot here, and I don't think you've actually spoiled it. There's a lot more to the plot.
It's a good ride. I would recommend it. It actually sounds like there is a plot in it.
Yes. That's the other thing with a lot of Superman. The plot has been Superman... Oh, look, villain comes to try and kill Superman. And it's like, but what's the plot other than there's another villain killing
Superman? I think you're being unnecessarily harsh on Superman, personally.
But this one seems to actually have a story that isn't necessarily about Superman, but he's involved in.
Yeah, and you don't want it bogged down with the whole...
Yeah, whereas before it's quite often been just about Superman, and it could be on Earth, it could have been on Mars, it could have been anywhere.
Well, this one is really good and it's worth a watch. Yeah.
We actually have a justification for Lex Luthor doing what he does. Yeah. I mean, yes, it's sort of undercover in virtually all the Lex Luthor stories, but it's brought to the fore.
And given a name.
And given a name,
I think he does a great job as Superman as well. I loved some of the music. They brought in hints of the John Williams.
They did.
Guitar riff.
Yeah.
Sort of a bass guitar riff of the John Williams theme.
That was Star Wars. Yeah. I always get them
muddled.
Same guy. Yeah, that's what... Hum the Superman music.
That's it.
That's the one. Stop humming it. Stop dummily-dummeling it.
Is it because I grew up in the 70s that has some kind of effect? Yeah, I don't know.
It does give you...
It's a nostalgia fest.
Yeah, it must
be. It does send the hair on the back of your neck right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you were only 7 in 1987.
I grew up preferring Superman to Spider-Man because Spider-Man was just a cartoon, like a 60s cartoon to me. But I watched all of the Superman films and I remember really liking Supergirl as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The film
came on as well.
I wonder about me psychologically, the fact that Spider-Man and Superman bored me to a bit, but I do like Batman.
Batman was my favourite.
The villain, the one that's going to drop them off of the...
But see, there again, I watched the animated Spider-Man series religiously.
And I think Batman was more the 90s for me. It was when it all came back with the movies and then the cartoon with Mark Hamill. Yeah, exactly.
As I said, for me, Batman is always the...
Adam West.
Adam West version.
Mayor West.
Can never get rid of a bomb.
Which I also actually enjoy.
Okay. We really liked that.
Yeah.
Those of us who could be bothered to watch it.
Yeah, only 50% of us really liked it.
But all of you have to go and watch it, and then you have to write to us and tell us what you thought of it via show
at
staggeringstories.net. Right, I know someone who would love Superman because he was a Superman himself.
Oh, yes.
Was he?
He was. One, two, three.
Hello, Head of Pertwee!
Hello, Inky McSquirtzalot and various, Dinky McSquirtzalot.
Various nebulas.
Folded up and propped against a radiator, Clara.
Terrence!
Moomin!
Yeah, fascist
Spock. Churchill, Nazi Spock.
Dave Zilla.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the various menageries of...
And Sandy the Stormtrooper.
A couple of Transformers.
Have we mentioned Hilda Knobnacker for a while?
No, best not. She knows why.
All right.
But we have mentioned the goats.
The goats. The goats.
Lead us out, Crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww.
Oh, God.
But never fear. In the next one, there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity, and jollity. More news and reviews. More who, old and new. So, until that...
S for Superman!
Staggering.
Stories.
Stupendously.
Stolen.
Succulently.
From Slough.
Sillily.
Come slithering.
And sizzling.
In a soliloquy.
From Peterborough.
Towards us.
This is me, Crumbly, saying you.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
A good bookshop is just a genteel black hole that knows how to read.
See, that was much better. Your last one really annoyed me because it was like an essay and there's only so many times I can copy and paste the end of Watch with Mother.
Is that why you made eye contact?
It was. Because, okay. Oh, I bollocked him. I tutted heavily in his direction. You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 477, featuring Adam Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Fake Keith, Gene Ridder, Scott Fuller, and the real Keith Dunn. Views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Adam, your shirt matches your muff.
One word that has so many meanings in the English language.
People who love buses are often called bus enthusiasts, bus fans, or bus spotters. In British English, bus nuts is also used colloquially, but that's AI, so there's bound to be something.
It's bus wankers.
Shall we sound check?
Yes.
Are you going to check the mics? Check the mics. Check the mics. Are you going to check the mics? Check
the mics. Check the mics.
Are you going to check the mics?
Check the mics. Check the mics.
Are you going to check the mics?
Early
in the morning.
I would just like to point out that my legs are far too short to kick my microphone today.
However,
have your legs shrunk?
Is the microphone is the socket shoved in the
Yes. Maybe I will be shouting over your shoulder.
You will.
Shut up, Karen. It's my turn.
No, it's my turn.
No fighting over the microphone.
That's what you get, Scott. That's what you get. There was Criminal Minds on Friday, and I didn't watch it. Why didn't I watch it? Steve was around, and then we went to bed.
Oh, really?
Mm. Not with Steve.
Oh, okay.
And we were all doing it. It'd have been exactly, rude not yeah. to.
I yeah. didn't want to be the only one not doing it.
Yeah, exactly. You'd look weird.
I wasn't. It's watching people go in funny colours. Like I said, all you have to do
starting to sway
is turn your head away from the mic and breathe shallow.
Unconscious. Yeah.
Ooh, hypoxia. Oh.
Got to learn from is it David Carradine?
Dude.
I haven't got a tie and things.
And a belt.
And a bin bag.
Yeah. And they're not dangling from anything.
I thought he was inside the cupboard. I thought he was dangling from... Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Is my tripod leg too near you? Do you want me to move it?
No, it's fine, okay. I'd say it's all cute, but they're so hairy.
Yep. Only on one side, though. I don't know what's going on there. They used to be hair on both.
That's called middle age.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm receding on my legs.
You do.
You do.
He has got no hair around his ankles or up to his knees anymore.
Oh, wow. Which is cool. Okay. At least not being left out.
Sorry, I just kicked your microphone.
Oh. That's okay. Because it wasn't me.
So...
The milkshake is actually more ice cream than
milkshake. It's just your power of suction is immense.
Ooh, missus.
For now.
It's eaten the actual straw.
Yes, we've discussed this before. Chewing is not advisable. Men don't like it.
It gives you a moment, a pause, I've got to admit.
So you're saying the ice cream has actually corroded the straw?
Well, it's McDonald's.